Rowan sat up stiffly in bed. She hurt all over, and her mouth tasted foul. She felt more tired now than when she went to bed. She reached painfully over to the bedside table and grabbed the cupful of potion she'd prepared earlier. She took a quick sip, then leaned back against the headboard and looked unhappily at the sickly green stuff in the cup. Putting mint in to flavor it had definitely been a mistake. It must have clashed with something. On the other hand, it couldn't taste much worse than her mouth did anyway. She lifted the cup determinedly while her nerve held out and gulped the horrid stuff down. It tasted even worse than she felt, and she indulged herself by making awful faces as she put the cup down on the table. She paused in mid-grimace as she noticed the steaming cup of tea on the silver tray, also resting on the bedside table. Her mouth flattened into a thin line. Toom had been in her room again. She was going to have to do something about Toom. Rowan began to feel a little better as the potion began its work. She pushed back the bedclothes and swung her legs over the side of the bed. She picked up the cup of tea, looked at it for a moment, and then sipped at it cautiously. It was strong and sweet, and a pleasant warmth moved through her. Say what you would about Toom, and she could think of a lot, most of it based around the word irritating, the fact remained that he made a good cup of tea. Still, she was definitely going to have to do something about him. She'd made it as clear as she could that she had no feelings of any kind for him and would be just as happy if he'd find somebody else to pester, but he seemed determined not to get the point. Maybe she should try something more direct, like hitting him. She didn't really want to be unpleasant about it, but it might be kinder in the long run. It certainly wasn't fair to let him go on hanging around like this. She smiled sourly as she sipped her tea. Not that she had time for any more complications in her life, but if someone had to fall for her, why couldn't it have been Buchan? All right, he was a few years older than she, but he still had one hell of a body. He was more experienced than Toom, more sophisticated. He would have understood the situation. They could have had a marvelous, uncomplicated affair that was fun while it lasted, but nothing to fret over when it was finished.
But no. The dashing debonair, handsome Charles Buchan, couldn't be bothered to look at the likes of me. He has to save himself for those stinking bitches at the Sisters of Joy. Such a waste of a good man. But then, that is the way the world goes. Nothing is what it seems, nobody can be trusted, and there is no point in believing in anything unless I can hold it in my hand and check it for flaws. A harsh philosophy, but better than nothing.
She looked at the traveling clock on the mantelpiece. Buchan should be back from the Hellfire Club soon, along with the two guards. She scowled.
Hawk and Fisher are going to be trouble. I could tell from the start. They don't understand what's happening on the Street of Gods, but that won't stop them from charging blindly and trying to put things right by brute force. They are fools, dangerous fools.
Rowan looked wistfully at her warm, comfortable bed. Just another half hour's rest would feel so good. She heard footsteps coming up the stairs and tensed. Her head was still too muzzy for her to see who it was. The footsteps came unhurriedly along the landing and stopped outside her door. There was a long pause. Rowan knew that knock.
Come in, Toom.
As the sorcerer came in, he shot a quick glance at Rowan to see how she was, and then smiled winningly at her.
Just thought I'd look in and see that you were up. The others will be back soon.
Yes, I know. I'm feeling much better, thank you.
That's good. I'm glad.
Toom?
Yes, Rowan?
Do you think you could shut the door? It's rather drafty in here.
Oh, yes, of course.
He tried his winning smile again. Rowan realized she was still holding the teacup and put it down on the tray.
Thank you for leaving me tea again. That was very sweet of you.
You're welcome.
The sorcerer grinned and nodded his head, pleased. Rowan thought tiredly that he was just like a puppy that's done a trick correctly and wants to be patted and told he's a good dog. How the hell could a first-class sorcerer like Toom be such an idiot when it comes to women? She felt she really didn't need this now. Toom's smile slowly disappeared, and he shuffled his feet uncertainly.
You know, Rowan, I really am getting rather concerned about you.
You are? Why?
Well, This isn't the first time you've been ill like this, is it?
There's no need for you to worry. I'll be fine. I know what I'm doing.
Toom visibly braced himself to disagree with her.
I know you have a lot of faith in your potions, Rowan, but I really would be a lot happier if you let me call in a doctor, just to look you over and make sure it's nothing serious.
I do not need a doctor. How many times do I have to tell you, Toom? My health and how I look after myself are none of your business.
But I do worry about you.
Don't. There's no reason why you should be so concerned. Just because I'm a part of the God Squad doesn't give you the right to hover around me like a broody hen. You're an acquaintance of mine, Toom. Nothing more, is that clear?
Toom nodded slowly.
Yes, Rowan, very clear.
Now don't go all sulky on me. How long have I got before the guards get back with Buchan?
Toom's face went blank for a moment as he used the sight.
They're just approaching the front door. I'd better go down and greet them. If you're sure you're all right now.
I'm fine.
Then I'll see you in a while.
He turned and left the room quickly before she could say anything else. Rowan knew she shouldn't be so harsh with Toom, but that damned puppy dog routine of his was getting on her nerves. She got up off the bed, stripped off her nightgown, and reached for her clothes. She was looking forward to hearing Hawk and Fisher tell about what happened at the Hellfire Club. Everyone was back in their favorite chairs in the drawing room. Toom handed around long, narrow glasses of his syrupy sherry, and everyone except Hawk accepted the wine with a smile. Hawk sat back in his chair and tried not to feel like a barbarian. There was a quiet moment as everyone else sipped at their drinks.
Let's start with the Hellfire Club. What did you think of them, Captain Hawk?
A bunch of amateurs, playing with magic and jumping at shadows. No danger to anyone, except maybe themselves.
But did you turn up any connection to the god killings?
Toom sat on the edge of his chair as though anxious not to miss a syllable.
Not really, but we did come across something interesting. Before we were seconded to you, Hawk and I were investigating the murder of a sorcerer named Bode.
Fisher didn't miss the quickly stifled reactions from Buchan and Rowan at Bode's name, but carried on as though she hadn't noticed.
We didn't have the time to find out who killed him, but we did discover that Bode had been hired by some unknown person to carry out a secret mission on the Street of Gods.
Did he succeed in this mission?
We don't know. We didn't find any evidence directly linking him to the god killings, but we did discover that Bode had been experimenting with homunculi, that is, magically produced physical duplicates.
Yes, we all know what a homunculus is.
Fisher gave Rowan a hard look that didn't faze the mystic a bit.
Somehow, Bode invested one of these duplicates with all his rage and hate and set it to guard his house against intruders. He called it the Dark Man. It was huge, muscular, and very nasty. It murdered at least 4 people that we know of. Hawk and I killed it.
This is all very interesting, but what has it got to do with the Hellfire Club? Or the god killings?
Fisher looked at Hawk to see if he'd like to continue the story, but he was busy looking for some convenient receptacle into which he could surreptitiously empty his sherry glass.
On our way back from studying the murder sites of the 3 dead beings, we were attacked by a second dark man. We killed him. A third dark man tried to kill us at the Hellfire Club. We killed that one, too.
For a long moment, no one said anything. Toom frowned deeply.
Did you notice any differences between the 3 homunculi?
Yeah, they're getting harder to kill.
More than that.
Hawk put down his empty sherry glass.
They were all unnaturally strong, but the muscular development was different each time. There was no way it could have been the same body. And yet each time we met, the Dark Man was much harder to deal with. It's as though he learns from his previous mistakes. I think there's one single mind controlling all the homunculi, jumping from body to body. It's also quite possible that there are more dark men out there somewhere waiting for another chance at us.
The God Squad looked at each other.
Can you tell us anything about this sorcerer Bode?
Well, apart from his having a mysterious mission on the Street of Gods at the same time as the gods started dying, apparently he also gave Lord Arthur Sinclair the original inspiration for the Hellfire Club. Bode does seem to get around, doesn't he? Did any of you know him?
Buchan nodded slowly.
I met him a few times on the Street of Gods. Seemed a pleasant enough sort, though I never did find out what he was doing on the street. I haven't seen him for some time.
Was this before or after the god killings began?
Before, I think.
Did you ever meet his girlfriend?
Didn't know he had one. Is she important?
Beats me. Anyone else here know Bode?
I met him once or twice. He was asking questions on the street, so I checked him out just to see what he was up to.
We get all sorts down here, and it pays to be careful. He was a bit vague about what he was doing on the street, but that's not unusual. He seemed harmless enough, so I let him be.
And what kind of questions was he asking?
Questions about the gods, their powers, their backgrounds, things like that. The usual tourist stuff. And I didn't see any girlfriend either.
Hawk sat quietly a moment, letting his thoughts settle. Bode was turning out to be an important link in the case, but they didn't really know anything about him. Perhaps he should contact the guards in charge of the Bode killing and have them send over all the papers found in Bode's house. Maybe there was something in them that would shed more light on the sorcerer.
Assuming all the homunculi have a single mind, the important question must be who's controlling them.
Well, Bode, I would assume. After all, the Dark Men are all versions of his own body. Perhaps he knew he was going to die, so he committed suicide and transferred his soul into one of the homunculi. That way, he'd be free to continue with his mission, whatever it is.
Suicide? The cause of death was a single stab wound through the heart. If it was suicide, what happened to the knife?
That's a good point. But if it isn't Bode, who is it?
Presumably the anonymous person who gave him his mission. Whoever it is didn't want to be seen on the Street of Gods in person, which suggests that somebody would have known him and recognized him.
Or her. Remember the girlfriend? That could have been our unknown person, emerging briefly from the shadows to give Bode new orders.
This is getting complicated. If we assume the Dark Men aren't really Bode, why are they still after you two?
We're dangerous, because we're getting closer to the truth, and the Dark Man knows it.
Wait a minute. We're overlooking something important. Did I understand you to say that the sorcerer Bode was killed in his own house? Why didn't his magic protect him?
Good question. We don't know. When we got there, there was no trace of magic anywhere in the house. No wards, no booby traps, nothing.
That's insane. Even after his death, the protective wards should still have been there. They usually have to be dismantled by another sorcerer. Damn it. Every sorcerer has wards of some kind. You can't work without them.
All right, so it's crazy. Doesn't surprise me. The whole damn case is crazy.
But it is definitely looking more and more like one case.
It seems to me that we're not going to get anywhere until we find out what Bode was doing here on the street. That's got to be the key to everything.
So it would seem. In which case, it's fortunate I asked an acquaintance of mine to join us here this evening. I thought Hawk and Fisher ought to meet him. He's very knowledgeable about the Street of Gods. It's said that nothing happens on the street that he doesn't know about, often before it happens.
Oh, no, you haven't. You haven't called him in, have you? Not Lacey.
Dirty little sneak.
He serves a purpose.
Tomb turned to Hawk and Fisher and smiled, almost apologetically.
In order to do our job here on the street, we have to be in constant touch with everything that's going on. Given the nature of the Street of Gods, that can be rather difficult. Roan and I both have the sight, but there's a limit to how much ground we can cover, so we are forced to depend on various reliable sources for our information.
Right. Half our budget goes on bribe money.
And most of that goes to Lacey.
He's always proved most useful to us. He has his own organization of informants and eavesdroppers. They bring him all the news, rumor, and gossip, and he puts it all together. He's predicted more trends, business deals, heresies, and conspiracies than all our sources put together.
He's also a nasty, repellent little creep, and he makes my skin crawl.
We know the sort. We use informants in our line of work, too.
How much do you pay them?
Isabel lets them live. They seem happy to settle for that.
Anyway, our man Lacey is waiting just down the hall. With your permission, I'll have him join us.
He looked around for objections, but no one said anything. Buchan was clearly indifferent to the idea, and Rowan was sulking. Tomb gestured sharply with his left hand, and the drawing room door swung open on its own.
Do come in, Lacey. There's a good fellow.
There was a pause, and then a wide, fleshy figure appeared in the doorway, smiling ingratiatingly. He was better than average in height, but his great bulk made him look shorter. He moved slowly, but with a surprising grace, and something in the way he held himself suggested he was no stranger to violence, should it prove necessary. He had a round, bland face, the main features of which were his small dark eyes and constant smile. Fisher didn't like the smile. It looked practiced. His hair was dark and greasy, plastered flat and parted neatly down the middle. Just looking at him, you knew immediately that you could trust him completely, provided you kept up the payments, but that the moment you ran out of money, he'd disappear in an instant. The smile got worse the more you saw of it. The insecurity of it grated on the nerves like fingernails on a blackboard. All in all, Lacey was the kind of man you didn't want to shake hands with in case some of his personality rubbed off on you.
My dear Tomb, how nice to see you again. Looking well, as always. And your charming associates, Buchan and Rowan, two of my favorite people. Always happy to be of service to you, my friends. Now then, I see we have guests present. Captains of our illustrious city guard, no less. Will you honor me with your name, sir and madam?
Captain Hawk and Captain Fisher. We're here on official business.
Something happened to Lacey's face. He didn't flinch, and he didn't stop smiling, but his eyes were suddenly cold and watchful. He looked very much as though he'd like to see how far it was to the door, but didn't quite dare look. Apparently, even on the Street of Gods, people had heard of Hawk and Fisher.
The renowned Captains Hawk and Fisher! An honor indeed to make your acquaintance. What can I do for you?
We need information. Not long ago, a sorcerer named Bode appeared on the street asking questions about the gods. What can you tell us about him?
Lacey smiled like a decrepit cherub, lowered his considerable bulk into the one remaining chair, and laced his fingers across his vast stomach.
Bode, yes, I know that name.
He paused a moment to arrange his weight more comfortably. He smiled about him pleasantly and then began to speak without pause or hesitation, as though he'd only been waiting for permission to speak a piece he'd already prepared. For all Hawk knew, that might just be the case.
Bode was a low-level sorcerer, mainly interested in alchemy and the production of homunculi, an expensive interest, which he supported through his extensive knowledge of pills and potions. He was well-known in his field, but was never going to be anyone important. He lacked the drive and the determination. He knew this, but it didn't seem to bother him. He was not, by all accounts, ambitious. He first appeared on the Street of Gods just over a month ago, asking questions about the powers and backgrounds of the gods, where they came from, what attributes they possessed, why people worshipped them, the usual tourist stuff. Unlike most tourists, however, Bode wasn't prepared to settle for the usual answers. He kept digging for more and more details, refusing to be put off, even when it was made clear to him that some of his questions were not appreciated by the beings involved. He just pressed harder for answers, putting things together, despite several quite specific warnings. He was either very brave, very stupid, or lacking in any sense of self-preservation. He died quite recently, at his home in the North Side. Accounts of the manner of his death seemed confused, but all the accounts agree that the good captains Hawk and Fisher were somehow involved as investigating officers.
Lacey sat back in his chair, smiling serenely in a self-satisfied way. There was a long pause as everyone digested the information he'd provided.
Beyond his determined questioning, did anyone spot anything unusual about Bode?
Well, apart from what I've already told you, there were a few interesting occurrences. Several times on the street, Bode was recognized by old friends, who went over to talk to him, as old friends do. It would appear that Bode was very short with them on these occasions. He wouldn't discuss his business or what he was doing on the street, and on some occasions even pretended not to know them. All of which was most unlike Bode. Perhaps he thought he was acting undercover, so to speak, but he made no effort to disguise himself.
Did anyone ever see Bode looking different? Larger, more muscular?
Lacey looked at her sharply.
An interesting question, Captain. It is true that since Bode's death, previously reliable sources have reported seeing Bode walking the Street of Gods again, looking somehow different. Perhaps you can shed a little light on that, Captain.
Not right now. According to some reports, Bode sometimes met his girlfriend on the street. Can you tell us anything about her?
Unfortunately, I have been able to learn very little about her, Captain. She appeared on only three occasions, each time heavily muffled under a cloak and hood. On the last occasion, two of my associates tried to get a close look at her. They both died right there on the street.
Hawk leaned forward in his chair.
How did they die?
Natural causes, Captain. Heart attacks. Simultaneous heart attacks.
Sorcery.
Lacey inclined his head in agreement, but said nothing.
So, We have a sorcerer and a sorceress on the Street of Gods asking questions about the beings. Questions the beings don't want to answer. Perhaps that's why the beings died. Because they wouldn't answer the questions.
Or because they did.
I'm not sure I follow that.
I'm not sure I do myself. What worries me is how the beings died. You'd need a hell of a lot of power to overcome a being on his own territory. You'd need a sorcerer the level of a high warlock. And if someone like that was on the street, we'd all know about it.
Let's move away from Bode for a moment. Lacey, what's the situation on the street at present? How are the beings reacting to the murders?
Badly, my dear friend. There's a great deal of unease in the street, both inside and outside the temples. In their own way, the beings are quite frightened. They all tend to paranoia at the best of times. Right now, most of them are busy looking for an enemy they can blame everything on, someone to strike back at. Old rivalries are becoming more intense. Old hatreds are being fueled afresh. Everyone knows you're doing your best to find the killer, but the gods aren't known for their patience. I fear it's only a matter of time before some god decides to take matters in its own hands and strikes the first blow. And we all know what that would lead to.
A god war.
Yes, I'm rather afraid I am. Unless something is done soon, something significant, things are going to get worse on the street very quickly. As it is, we're all waiting for the inevitable spark to set off a conflagration none of us can hope to put out.
I can't help feeling we're missing something. Something so close we can't see the wood for the trees. Lacey, do you know of any connection between the three dead beings?
For the first time, Lacey looked a little uneasy, though his smile never wavered.
Well, there is one coincidence, my friends, but it may be nothing more than that.
We'll decide what's important. What is it?
Lacey braced himself visibly.
Each of the dead beings received a visit from the deity division on official business not long before their death.
Hawk looked sharply at Tomb.
Is that right?
Well, yes. But we visit beings all the time. It's part of our job. We visited so many beings recently, I haven't even noticed the dead beings were included.
But it is a connection.
Riot on the Street of Gods. Riot on the Street of Gods. All available personnel report to the Street of Gods immediately. This command overrides all other orders and priorities until further notice.
Hawk and Fisher scrambled to their feet, their hands clawing instinctively for their weapons. The God Squad were on their feet too, looking equally shocked. Vade picked up the message, too. Lacey rose uncertainly to his feet.
My friends, what is it? What has happened?
It seems your information came a little too late this time. Someone's just fired the first shot in a god war.
Rowan ran out the door, with Tomb close behind her. Lacey made as though to approach Buchan and then hesitated.
Pardon my intrusion, my friends, but about my fee.
Worry about that later. Buchan.
But...
I said later!
The informer backed away quickly. Hawk turned back to Buchan, who was still standing in a daze.
Sir Buchan, I think we ought to get moving. The riot won't wait for us to get there.
Of course. I'm sorry. I just never really thought it would happen, that's all. There hasn't been a serious riot on the street in almost 70 years.
71?
You're the expert, Buchan. What's the best thing to do?
Pray. But make sure you pick the right god.
Hawk could hear the riot long before he could see it. The Street of Gods felt strangely out of sync, as though the various realities that made it up were no longer in alignment. Churches appeared and disappeared, and doors changed shape. Unnatural lights blazed in the starless sky, spread across the night like color on a madman's palette. A surging vibration trembled in the ground underfoot, like the slow, regular heartbeat of something indescribably huge buried down below. Hawk and Fisher ran down the street, weapons at the ready. They'd been running for some time, but the riot didn't seem to be getting any nearer. The street was like that sometimes, but at that moment, it wasn't doing a thing for Hawk's nerves. He breathed deeply, trying to get more air into his lungs, and hoped his second wind would kick in soon. Fisher seemed to be struggling a little too, and she could usually run him into the ground. Buchan, on the other hand, was loping effortlessly along beside them, as though he covered this kind of distance every day before breakfast and thought nothing of it. With his physique, maybe he did. Hawk tried to stick with that train of thought, but his mind insisted on bringing him back to what passed for reality on the Street of Gods. The guard communication sorcerer hadn't been very specific about how bad the riot was, But he wouldn't have sent out a general alarm like that unless his superiors had been sure something extremely nasty was happening up ahead. He wondered briefly where Toom and Rowan were. They'd disappeared even before Hawk left God Squad headquarters, but there was no sign of them on the street. Maybe they knew a shortcut. Maybe they'd already got to the riot and had things safely under control. Hawk rounded a corner that hadn't been there the last time he'd been this way and then skidded to a halt, Fisher and Buckin piling up beside him. They'd found the riot. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of gaudily robed priests and acolytes were milling back and forth on the street, furiously attacking each other with swords and fists and broken bottles. Everywhere there were bloody hands and faces, and unmoving bodies trampled blindly underfoot by the savage mob. Old hatreds ran loose and free as age-old vendettas finally came to a head. Blinding lights flared from churches and temples, and overhead the sky churned sickly with uncontrolled magic. A handful of guards got there before Hawk and Fisher, and were fighting back-to-back on the edges of the crowd, too busy trying to stay alive to do anything about the riot. The street belonged to the fanatics now, and they didn't care who they killed. A dozen green-robed priests swarmed over a guard constable and knocked him to the ground. He disappeared behind a host of swinging boots. Hawk and Fisher waded in to help. Whatever else was happening, guards looked after their own. They had to. No one else would. Hawk's axe swept back and forth in short, vicious arcs, and blood flew on the air. The priests scattered, and Fisher cut down those who didn't move fast enough. No one attacked a guard and got away with it. It might give people ideas. The remaining priests disappeared into the crowd, and Buckin stood guard as Hawk and Fisher got the battered constable to his feet and led him to the safety of a recessed doorway. There was blood on his face and his legs were shaky, but he seemed more or less intact. He nodded his thanks and tried to get his thoughts together.
Have you been here long?
Can't be more than 10-20 minutes, but it seems like forever. Just my luck to be working a beat so close to the Street of Gods when the riot call came.
Do you know what caused all of this?
Seems another god has been murdered.
The man paused to wipe blood out of his eyes. Buckin passed him an immaculately clean handkerchief, and the constable pressed it gingerly to his forehead.
The Lord of the New Flesh is dead. Someone ripped both its hearts right out of its breast. The High Priest found the body less than an hour ago. Didn't take long for the word to get around. We don't know who actually started the riot. Could have been anybody.
Details can wait. How many more guards are there already here?
There were 17. We all got here about the same time, but the crowd separated us. We better get some reinforcements here soon. The Vians are mad as hell and scared spitless. It's only a matter of time before one of them decides to take a hand personally. And you can bet your arse, if one god comes out onto the street, they all bloody will. Where the hell's the God Squad? They're supposed to prevent things like this from happening.
They're here somewhere.
Paul carefully didn't look at Buckin.
We'll just have to try and keep the lid on things until they get their act together. Has anybody sent for the SWAT team?
First thing we did when we got here was to scream for the SWAT team. The card into the communication source, sir. They're busy dealing with an emergency on the other side of the city. Typical. They're never bloody around when they're needed. They should be here. We can't cope with this.
Take it easy. We're just guards, not heroes. No one expects us to cope with everything. We just do the best we can.
She broke off to wave at a contingent of guards running down the street toward them.
Look, you join up with this bunch and fill them in on the situation. We'll do what we can here. Now move it!
The constable nodded briefly.
Right. Hey! You men! You're needed down that way! Follow me!
He moved off to intercept the newcomers. Hawk and Fisher looked at the growing riot and then at Buckin.
It was up to me. I just let them get on with it. With a bit of luck, all the fanatics would kill each other off and the Street of Gods would be a far more peaceful place. But unfortunately, the constable was right. If we don't break this up, the gods will get involved. If that happens, I, for one, am not hanging around to see who wins. I'm going to beg, borrow, or steal a pair of fast horses, and you can wave Fisher and me goodbye as we head for the nearest horizon.
Buckin looked at Fisher.
He really would, wouldn't he?
No, he's not that sensible. He always did think about his duty too damn much. And since I won't leave without him, it looks like we're here for the duration.
Fisher looked out over the frenzied mob and shook her head disgustedly.
Oh, I've seen smaller armies. You're the expert, Buckin. How do we handle this?
Clear the street. Don't worry about the gods. Toom and Rowan will take care of them if necessary. The rioters are our responsibility.
Get everyone off the street, just like that?
It's not difficult. We just have to make them more scared of us than they are of anything else. They may look dangerous, but most of them aren't armed, and those who are probably don't have much combat experience. Either way, they're no match for professionals like us.
Hawk looked at him steadily.
So, we just wade right in and slaughter everything that moves, is that it?
Pretty much. And watch yourselves. Rioting is a capital offense, and they know it. They'll kill you if you give them an opening. Don't make the mistake of thinking they'll respond to reason. They won't. They're beyond that now. So just do what you have to do, and worry about the body count later.
Buckenwalk and his sword flashed. Robed bodies fell to the ground and didn't move again.
The trouble is, he's right. I hate this job sometimes.
If we don't stop this riot, hundreds will die. Maybe thousands. What are a few lives compared to that?
I know, but it doesn't make it any easier. I joined the guard to protect people, not butcher them. Come on, Isabel, let's do it.
More guards spilled onto the Street of Gods from all directions, drawn from all over the city, and soon the cobbled ground was slippery with blood and gore. An armored contingent arrived from the Brotherhood of Steel, eager for a fight and determined to restore order. Priests and acolytes threw down their weapons and ran for the safety of their temples. Piles of dead and injured lay scattered across the street, mostly ignored. Some of them were guards. A handful of guard sorcerers appeared on the scene, and slowly the shifting realities returned to what passed for normal on the Street of Gods. Hawk slowly lowered his axe and looked about him. The last of the rioters left the street, leaving only the baleful moans of the injured and dying to color the night. Tired-looking guards sorted the injured rioters from the dead and finished the job. Rioting, as Buchan had said, was a capital offense. Hawk turned his head away and sat down sullenly, his back to a wall.
Yeah.
There were some things he wouldn't do, and to hell with what the law said. Fisher dropped down beside him and leaned against him, her head on his shoulder.
They're not paying us enough for this.
They couldn't pay us enough for this.
Why are we doing it?
Because someone has to protect the innocent and avenge the wronged. It's a matter of honor and duty.
That argument doesn't sound as convincing as it used to.
Hawk nodded slowly.
At least the worst is over. Damn!
What?
Hawk and Fisher scrambled to their feet and looked around just in time to see something huge and deadly surging out of a temple doorway not nearly big enough to let it through. Stone and timber broke apart and fell away as the being emerged onto the Street of Gods. It was at least 30 feet high, a shimmering patchwork of metal fragments held together by rags and strings of rotting flesh. Patches of dark, discolored skin revealed splintered bone and obscurely connected metal mechanisms. Steel and crystal machine parts thrust through the tattered hide, their razor-sharp edges grinding together as the being rose to its full height. A roaring crimson fire burned in its steel belly and glowed in its bony eye sockets. It had slender, jagged arms with long, clawed hands that shimmered in its own bloody light. Broken silver chains hung from its wrists. Its steel jaws opened and snapped together like a man-trap. A long tail studded with bony spikes lashed back and forth behind it. It had gotten out, and there was nothing anyone could do to stop it. The scream sent shivers through Hawk. There was nothing remotely human in the sound. The creature should never have lived, and was not alive in any way that made sense. But this was the Street of Gods, and it had gotten out, and not even those who had prayed to it for so long could hope to control it. It lowered its massive head and looked at the guards and Brothers of Steel gathered before it. There were close to 300 armed men facing the being, and Hawk knew with a sickening certainty that they weren't going to be enough. The huge creature darted forward, and its razor-sharp claws raked through a dozen men. More died screaming as the creature surged back and forth, crushing men under its massive bulk. Swords and axes cut uselessly at the being's patchwork hide. Its long head snapped down to bite a man in half. Blood dripped from the metal jaws like steaming saliva. The guards and the Brotherhood fell back, only their training keeping them from utter panic. The few guard sorcerers roared and chanted, but their magic shattered harmlessly against the rogue being, whose very existence defied the laws of reality.
Where the hell did that thing come from?
Fisher and Hawk peered warily at the creature from the shadows of a concealed doorway.
Must be a god of some kind.
You mean there are people crazy enough to worship that?
This is Haven, Isabel. They'll worship anything around here. And if one god's out, it won't be long before more come out to join it. I think this might be a good time to make a strategic retreat.
Fisher looked at him sharply.
We're not going anywhere, Hawk. We're God Squad now. Since the rest of the squad has apparently vanished, that means that thing is our responsibility. It has to be stopped here before it gets into a more populated part of the city.
I hate it when you're right. Okay, you take left, I'll take right. We'll circle around behind the thing and see if we can cut through whatever it has instead of tendons in its legs. That should bring it down to our height, if nothing else.
If that doesn't work,
pray really hard that Toom and Rowan are on their way here, instead of doing the sensible thing and hiding in a storm cellar somewhere.
Oh, you worry too much, Hawk. After all, we've faced worse in our time.
They shared a smile, and then separated, darting silently from shadow to shadow as they made their way behind the unliving creature. The being reared up to its full height and glared down at the guards and Brothers of Steel scattered around it. The being's screams were almost painfully loud as Hawk emerged from the shadows behind it, hefting his axe. Up close, the dead flesh smelled of corruption and burning oil. The being's leg was taller than Hawk, and easily twice as broad. There were flat plates of metal sliding against each other, and fraying ropes of muscle that flexed and tore with every movement. Steel cables stretched and hummed, lined with traceries of broken veins. Hawk looked at the axe in his hand and shook his head slowly.
This is probably a really bad idea.
He swung it with all its strength at one of the steel cables in the left leg. The heavy axe sheared clean through the cable and wedged itself between the moving parts inside the leg. Hawk tugged at his axe, but it was stuck tight. The being lifted its leg, and Hawk was jerked up into the air, still clinging grimly to his axe. The foot slammed down heavily, cracking the cobbled ground, and Hawk was thrown clear. He lay on his back a moment, dazed, and then rolled quickly to one side. The taloned foot slammed down where he'd been lying. He clambered shakily to his feet and saw his axe protruding from the leg just in front of him. He grabbed it firmly with both hands, pulled hard, and almost fell down again as it came away easily. The impact of the stamping foot had jarred it loose.
Great. Now what do I do? Cutting the cable didn't even slow the thing down.
He caught a glimpse of something moving on the edge of his vision. He spun around, axe at the ready, and then relaxed a little as he saw it was Fisher. He just had time to nod acknowledgement, and then both of them had to throw themselves to the ground. A huge clawed hand slashed through the air where they'd been a moment before. They hit the ground rolling and were up and running before the being could turn to face them. They ran in different directions to confuse it. The two guards darted into a narrow alleyway, and the being lurched to a halt at the alley mouth, uncertain how to get to them. Hawk and Fisher backed away down the alley, not taking their eyes off the creature. And then the being slowly turned its head and looked away, as though sensing a greater menace close at hand. It looked back down the street, and then turned quickly to face the new threat. Hawk and Fisher watched silently from the protective shadows. Toom and Rowan stood side by side in the middle of the Street of Gods, facing the rogue being. Everyone else had disappeared. Only the dead remained, scattered over the cobbles like so many crumpled heaps of bloody clothing. The being stared at Toom and Rowan with its furnace eyes, and then started slowly, deliberately toward them. Rowan held up her left hand. A small blue jewel blazed brightly in her grasp, the azure light spilling between her fingers. The Exorcist Stone.
Odala!
Reality convulsed, shaking like a plucked harp string, and the rogue being was suddenly no longer there. Air rushed in to fill the vacuum left by the being's disappearance, and as quickly as that, it was all over. The night air was still and quiet, and the Street of Gods was calm again. Toom and Rowan turned away as the guards and Brothers of Steel reappeared on the street and moved among them, doing what they could to help the injured. The Exorcist Stone had disappeared, tucked casually away into one of Rowan's pockets. Hawk and Fisher leaned wearily back against the wall at the alley mouth, eyes closed, letting their aching muscles slowly relax. Tiredness so deep it was more like pain coursed through Hawk's body, tugging at his muscles like a persistent beggar demanding attention.
So, that was the Exorcist Stone.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Pretty color, too.
If nothing else, it should calm things down a bit. Both the beings and their priests will think twice before getting out of line again.
Don't bank on it. That's too sensible. Too logical. Nothing on this stupid street is ever logical.
True.
They moved along the Street of Gods to help with the injured. Toom waved and smiled at them briefly, but he and Rowan were too busy to break away. Buchan appeared from among a group of guards, caught Hawk and Fisher's attention and strode quickly toward them. Hawk took in Buchan's face and stance, and his heart sank. Whatever the man had to say, Hawk knew instinctively he didn't want to hear it. Buchan came to a halt before Hawk and Fisher and nodded briskly. His clothes and hands were wet with the blood of others.
Oh, whatever it is, the answer's no. I don't care if someone's planning to destroy the whole Street of Gods. I might even applaud. Isabel and I are exhausted. We've worked too hard too long, and we're way behind on our sleep. That's a dangerous state to be in. It's too easy to make mistakes when you're tired. So, Isabel and I are going to help out here for a while, and then we're going home to get some sleep. Whatever you want, we'll just have to wait.
Right.
Sleep can wait. This can't. I was just talking to one of the guard sorcerers. Something nasty is building at Hightower Hall. Something really nasty. Tomb and Rowan can't go. They're needed here. That just leaves us.
Read my lips. We're not going. Isabel's out on her feet, and I'm not much better. If the Hellfire Club's got their fingers burnt, it's their own damn fault.
This is God Squad business. We can't turn our backs on people who need us just because we don't like them.
Watch me. Isabel's in no state.
Oh, hell. Let's go. The time we spend arguing with Buchan, we could be there and back. Besides, I haven't got the strength to argue.
That's the spirit. It's only a mile or so to Hightory from here. We can do it in 10 minutes if we hurry. Don't you just love working in the God Squad? Never a dull moment.
He set off briskly down the Street of Gods, and Hawk and Fisher moved wearily after him.
If he doesn't stop being so damn cheerful, I'm personally going to tie both his legs in a square knot.
I'll help.
They hurried after Buchan. From the shadows of a side alley, the Dark Man watched them go, but made no move to follow. By the time they reached Hightower Hall, Hawk had found his second wind and was feeling only moderately shattered. The crisp, cold air of winter felt refreshing after the close, humid warmth of the Street of Gods and helped to clear his head. Even so, it was Buchan who noticed the first sign of something amiss. He stopped well short of the tall iron gates and looked uncertainly about him. Hawk and Fisher stopped with him, their hands dropping automatically to their weapons.
What's wrong?
It's too quiet, and there's no one watching the gates. Where are all the men-at-arms? They just wouldn't go off and leave the gates unguarded.
Buchan reached out and pushed at the gates, and they swung slowly open at the pressure.
Not even locked. Something unexpected must have happened. An emergency, a call for help, something. The men-at-arms went to investigate and never came back.
Buchan looked slowly around him, senses straining and alert.
There's something else, too. A feeling on the air.
Hawk nodded. He could feel it prickling on his skin and scratching at his nerves. A vague pressure, like the building tension on the air that warns of an approaching storm.
Magic. The Hellfire Club finally found a ritual that worked.
He hefted his axe once, and then moved cautiously through the gates and into the grounds. The only light came from the half-moon overhead and the wide, blazing windows of the hall. It was still and quiet, no sign of men-at-arms anywhere. Hawk padded softly forward, Fisher and Buchan close behind him, swords at the ready. They walked on the grass, avoiding the gravel pathway. Gravel was noisy. The hall loomed up ahead, silhouetted against the night sky. Almost halfway there, Hawk found two of the guard dogs. They were lying stretched out on the grass, still and silent, two darker shadows in the gloom. Hawk knelt down beside them and pushed one gently with his fingertips. The body rolled slightly back and forth, and then was still again. Both dogs were dead. He checked them over quickly, but there was no sign of any wound, no trace to show what killed them. It was as though they just lay down where they were, and the life went out of them.
Captain Fisher, do you still have your suppressor stone?
Sure. Why?
Activate it now. You and Captain Hawk better stay close together. That way the stone will protect you both from any general magic in the area.
What about you?
I have my own stone. Now, let's get moving. Something bad has happened at the hall, and I have a horrible feeling we've got here too late to stop it.
The three of them moved warily forward into the darkness, their eyes fixed on the hall. There was still no sign of any movement at the brightly blazing windows. Hawk was the first to reach the front door. It was open, standing slightly ajar. He pushed at it with his foot. The door moved back away and then stopped as it hit an obstruction. Hawk eased himself through the narrow gap and looked down to see what was blocking the door. As he'd expected, it was a body, one of the men-at-arms. Hawk knelt down and checked quickly for vital signs. The man-at-arms was alive, but only just. His skin was cold and deathly pale, his pulse slow, and his breathing disturbingly shallow. Hawk straightened up and looked along the hallway. More men-at-arms lay scattered and unmoving the length of the entrance hall.
There was an emergency. Someone called for help. The men-at-arms came running from the house and from the grounds. This was as far as they got. Whatever the Hellfire Club has called up, it didn't want to be disturbed.
But how could they have called up something? They were a bunch of amateurs. You said so yourself.
They must have had help.
What kind of help?
Good question. Let's go and find out.
Buchan took the lead and guided Hawk and Fisher unerringly through the maze of corridors that led to the ballroom. The silence was complete, broken only by their own soft footsteps. They found servants here and there lying crumpled where they fell, struck down by the same deathly sleep. Hawk peered continuously about him, skin crawling in anticipation of the attack that never came, his tiredness burned away by rising adrenaline. They finally came to the closed double doors that led to the ballroom. Buchan made as though to push the doors open and walk straight in, but Hawk stopped him with a cautious hand on his arm. He looked warily around him, then stepped forward and pressed his ear against the right-hand door. He couldn't hear anything. Either the wood was too thick or there wasn't anything to hear. Taking hold of both door handles, he very carefully eased the doors open an inch or two, and then stepped back. He made sure his grip on his axe was secure, looked quickly at Fisher and Buchan, then stepped forward and kicked the doors open. The three of them surged forward to fill the doorway, weapons at the ready. The quality lay strewn across the waxed and polished floor of the ballroom in their brightly colored finery, like so many broken butterflies. They lay singly or in heaps, wherever they'd been standing when the magic struck them down. Most were awake but unable to move. Some moaned quietly, as much in horror as in pain. All of them looked withered and ancient, aged long beyond their years, held somehow on the very edge of death as their life drained slowly out of them. Those nearest the blue chalk circle looked almost mummified. And there, in the middle of the ballroom, inside the blue circle, stood the thing the Hellfire Club had called up out of the gulfs. It looked across at the doorway and smiled charmingly.
Well now, visitors, how nice.
The figure was 6 feet tall, quite naked, and aesthetically muscular in a way usually achieved only by statues. Its face was classically handsome and unmarked by time, so flawlessly perfect as to be almost inhuman. A raw sensuality burned around it like an invisible flame, attractive and repellent in its uncaring arrogance, like bitter honey or the smell of an open wound masked by perfume. It was the perfect embodiment of the male form, burning with ruthless vitality.
What's wrong with the quality? What's happened to them?
The creature they called up is draining the life right out of them. Their deaths will make it even more powerful. Even a low-level sorcerer would have known to set wards so this couldn't happen, but these people were amateurs, and they didn't know. At least they had enough sense to draw a restraining circle. That should hold it for a while.
How long?
Only as long as it takes to drain its summoners dry. After that, it'll be powerful enough to break the circle, and there'll be nothing we can do to stop it.
What about the exorcist stone?
The creature will be gone long before we could get the stone here, and all the quality will be dead.
Great. Just great.
Hawk moved slowly forward, stopping right at the edge of the chalk circle. The creature watched him intently, still smiling its perfect smile. Hawk looked into the dark, unblinking eyes and saw no humor there, or any other emotion he could recognize.
Who are you? What are you?
I'm what they wanted. I'm all the darkness in their souls, all their hidden hates and wants and desires set free at last, given shape and form and substance in me. I'm strong and beautiful and perfect, because that's what they wanted me to be. Or perhaps because that's how they see themselves in the privacy of their mind's eye. Really doesn't matter. They gave me life, whether they meant to or not, and they'll go on giving me life until they die. Then, when I have fully come into my power, I'll leave them here and go out into the city, a new being in all his glory, a new god for the Street of Gods,
and men shall worship me as they always have, under one name or another, in blood and suffering and all the hidden darkness of their souls. I shall be very happy here. This city was built with me in mind.
I've met your kind before. You're just another dark man with an inflated sense of self-importance, that's all.
I shall show you blood and horror. I will break your body and your spirit, and you will praise me before I let you die. You don't understand what I am, what I really am. I'm everything that ever scared you, every dark impulse you tried to hide, your worst nightmare given flesh and blood and bone.
Fisher moved forward and stood with Hawk.
You're also stuck in that circle. And if you had any power to use against us, you would have used it by now. You're not leaving this circle. You're not going anywhere. We'll see to that.
So brave. You are nothing compared to me.
Thinks a lot of himself, doesn't he? Let's see how he likes a half a yard of cold steel rammed through his appendix.
No!
Bucket moved quickly forward to join the two guards at the edge of the circle.
Don't try it, Captain. You can't reach the thing from outside the circle. And once you cross the chalk line, your suppressor stone won't be able to protect you anymore. The creature would drain you dry just like the quality.
No problem.
Fisher sheathed her sword, took the throwing knife from her left boot, aimed it, and let it fly with a single rapid movement. The creature's hand moved, too quickly for the eye to follow, and snatched the knife in midair. It dropped the knife to the floor and smiled at Fisher. She blinked and turned to Buchan.
We might just have a problem here after all. How long do you think we've got before it has enough power to leave the circle?
Not long. Half the quality are at death's door already. Whatever we're going to do, we've got to do it soon.
Wait a minute. The exorcist stone would get rid of it, right? How about the suppressor stone? That's supposed to work on the same principle, isn't it?
Well, yes, but it's nowhere near as powerful. You'd have to get the suppressor stone within an inch or so of the creature. And even then, there's no guarantee it would work. And if it didn't, the creature would either drain you like the quality or tear you apart just for the fun of it.
If we wait till it gets out of the circle, we're dead anyway. Look, if you got a better idea, let's hear it. I'm not actually wild about going into that circle unless I have to.
There is another alternative.
Buchan turned his back on the creature and looked out over the ballroom.
It's gathering its power from the life force of the quality. If they were all to die before the creature could come into its full power, it would remain helpless within the circle.
We can't just kill them.
You think I like suggesting it? I grew up with these people. They're my friends.
It's out of the question.
No, it isn't. Kill us! Kill us all! Please! Do you think we want to live like this?
They found Lord Lewis Hightower sitting propped up against the wall. His flesh was pale and blotched and heavily wrinkled, sunk right back to the bone, and Buchan only recognized him by his clothes. His mouth was just a colorless gash, and his breathing barely stirred his chest, but still he fought to force out his words as Buchan knelt beside him.
If we die, the shock will kill that thing. It's linked to us!
Lewis!
Do it, Charles! Please! I can't face living like this!
No! If we can kill the thing while it's still in the circle, there's a damn good chance you'll get your life back. The link between you works both ways. Or it should.
Hawk knelt down beside the mummified figure.
Yeah. Let's at least try to save you. I've lost two Hightowers already. I don't want to lose a third.
Hightower looked at him, and his mouth moved in something that might have been a smile.
All right, Captain. Go ahead. But this time, get it right.
Hawk nodded stiffly, then straightened up and headed back to the edge of the circle. Fisher and Buchan went with him.
I take it you have some kind of plan.
I wouldn't bank on it. Hawk's always been a great one for improvising.
Well, basically, I thought I'd cut the creature's heart out and jam the suppressor stone into the hole. That should ruin its day.
Sounds good to me. You hit him from the left, I'll hit him from the right.
Oh, this is absolutely crazy. But let's do it before we get an attack of common sense and change our minds.
The three of them spread out around the circle, weapons at the ready. The creature smiled at them warmly and spread its arms as though welcoming them. Hawk hesitated a moment at the chalk line, then braced himself and stepped quickly across it. The years hit him like a club, almost forcing him to his knees. He could feel his joints stiffening and his muscles shriveling as life itself sucked out of him to feed the creature before him. His axe grew heavier with every movement, and it took all his strength to keep his back straight and his head erect. He heard Fisher and Buckin entering the circle, but he didn't look around. He didn't want to see what was happening to them. He didn't want to think about what was happening to him. He hefted his axe and threw himself at the smiling creature. It dodged the axe easily and sent Hawk flying across the circle with a casual backhand blow. He hit the ground hard. For a moment, Hawk couldn't find the strength to get to his knees. He gritted his teeth and staggered to his feet again, swaying from the effort. Fisher and Buckin were cutting at the creature with their swords, but the thing simply raised its arms to ward off the blows, and the blades sprang away as though they'd met solid metal instead of flesh. The creature's arms weren't even bruised. Fisher was an old woman with white hair and a heavily lined face. Buckin was bent and twisted with age, barely able to hold onto his sword. Hawk fought down a rising tide of panic. Their weapons were no use against the creature, but they had nothing else except the suppressor stones.
Get the stone close to it! Get it as close as possible or it won't work!
Hawk scowled. He knew what he'd like to do with the stone. The scowl slowly became a smile. When in doubt, be direct. As Buckin and Fisher continued their assault, Hawk put away his axe and lurched forward. The creature saw him coming, but since Hawk was empty-handed, ignored him to concentrate on fending off its armed attackers. Hawk moved in behind the creature and jumped the thing from behind, locking an arm around the creature's throat. It tried to grab him and throw him off, but couldn't quite reach. Hawk hung on grimly, forcing the head back.
Isabel! Get the stone and ram it down its throat!
Fisher dropped her sword and clawed the suppressor stone from her pocket. Buckin leaped forward and grabbed both the creature's arms. Fisher pressed the stone into its mouth, then she forced the mouth closed with both hands and held on with all her strength. Buckin punched the creature in the throat. It gagged and swallowed despite itself. Then Hawk, Fisher, and Buckin were alone in the circle. Hawk blinked dazedly a moment, then looked at Fisher and smiled widely with relief. She was herself again, the added years gone along with the creature that had tried to force them on her. They hugged each other tight for a long moment and then let go and looked around them. A hum of voices rose as the quality discovered they also had been renewed. Buckin was already moving among them, grinning and laughing, and being slapped on the back. Fisher noticed that her sword, her knife, and the suppressor stone were lying on the floor inside the circle, and she bent to retrieve them.
Oh, one of your better ideas, Hawk.
She sheathed her weapons.
Where did the creature go, do you suppose?
Back where it came from, and good riddance.
The noise in the ballroom had risen from a babble to a roar as the quality tried to figure out what had happened and exactly who was to blame. Lord Hightower shook Buckin firmly by the hand and then strode over to join the two guards. He nodded to them both, and they bowed politely.
I just wanted to extend my personal thanks and congratulations. I'll see there's a commendation in this for both of you. Going into that circle after that creature was the bravest thing I've ever seen.
Thank you, my lord. It's all part of the job.
I didn't get a chance to talk to you the last time you were here. I wanted to assure you and your partner that I don't hold you in any way responsible for the deaths of my father and my brother Paul. I checked you out very thoroughly. It wasn't your fault. You mustn't blame yourselves.
Thank you. I never really had the chance to know your father, but I liked your brother. He was a good man to work with.
Speaking of blame, how the hell did you manage to raise that creature in the first place?
Hightower frowned unhappily.
Lord Brunel came into possession of an old grimoire and persuaded us that some of its rituals might be adapted to suit our purposes. Yes, I know. We should have known better. But we thought we'd be safe, as long as we stayed outside the circle.
Oh, the typical, that is! Put all the blame on me!
The small group turned to see Brunel stalking toward them.
You're not laying the blame for all this at my door! We discussed whether or not to use the ritual, and everyone agreed, including you, Hightower! It wasn't my fault everything went wrong.
We can talk about this later. In the meantime, I think you'd better let me have the grimoire for safekeeping. My colleagues in the guard squad will want to examine it.
Brunel's hand dropped halfway to a square bulge underneath his waistcoat.
I'm not handing over anything. The grimoire's mine. If I let you have it, I'll never see it again. I know your sort. You'd keep it for yourself. But you're not having it. There's power in this book, and it belongs to your betters. All right, things got a bit out of hand this time, but...
This time? You're not thinking of trying this kind of stunt again.
Why not? Next time we'll get it right. You can't stop us. We're quality, and you're not. Not anymore. What we do is our business, and nothing to do with you. You're not one of us anymore, Buchan. And your precious heroics here tonight don't change a thing. You're still nothing more than a dirty little sister lover, and we don't want you here.
Fisher stepped briskly forward. She took the grimoire from his unconscious body. She looked around at the watching crowd.
Any objections?
No one said anything, and most of the quality looked away to avoid catching her eye. Fisher turned her back on them and handed the grimoire to Buchan.
You have to know how to talk to these people. Shall we go?
Buchan and Hightower exchanged a brief smile and then bowed formally to each other. Buchan left the ballroom through the open double doors, followed by Hawk and Fisher. Hawk turned back to shut the doors and came face to face with the silent, staring members of the quality. He'd helped save their lives, but all he could see in their faces was resentment, and perhaps even hate. They'd been saved by a social inferior who didn't even have the decency to be apologetic about it. Hawk grinned at them and winked on their disapproving scowls as he pulled the doors closed. Hawk and Fisher returned with Buchan to God Squad headquarters to find Rowan and Toom sitting slumped and shattered in their usual chairs in the drawing room. Apparently, clearing up the mess left on the Street of Gods had been a major undertaking, and was still continuing even now, but they'd done all they could. The beings remained in their churches and temples, and their followers had retired to lick their wounds and plot more trouble for the future. Everything was quiet for the moment, but it was a false peace, and everyone knew it. They were just waiting for the next dead being, and then there would be God War on the Street of Gods. And not even the Exorcist Stone would be enough to stop that.
I sent an urgent message to the Council's Circle of Sorcerers, bringing them up to date on the situation and asking for help and support. But as usual, the Circle was split by factions and intrigues, and probably won't even respond till it's too late. I don't know why I feel so bitter about it. This is Haven, after all.
Rowan's mouth twitched in something that might have been meant as a smile. She didn't just look tired, she looked exhausted. Her face was pale and slack, with dark bruises of fatigue under her eyes.
Are you feeling all right, Lady Rowan?
I'm fine. I just need a rest, that's all.
Rowan, I really think we'd all be a lot happier if you'd let us call in a doctor, just to have a look at you.
How many more times do I have to tell you?
Her anger produced two fiery red spots on her cheeks, but her face remained dull and impassive, as though the facial muscles were simply too tired to respond.
I don't need a doctor, I don't need fussing over, and most of all, I don't need you crawling around me all the time. Why won't you all just leave me in peace?
There was an awkward pause, and then Buchan rose unhurriedly from his chair.
Come on, Toom. Let's raid the kitchen and see what we can find there. I don't know about you, but I'm starving. It's typical. We had to have our busiest day in months on the one day in the week our servants have off.
Toom nodded without looking at him, and the two men left the drawing room. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other, then Hawk turned to Rowan.
I hate to press you on this, Lady Rowan, but if there is something seriously wrong with you, we need to know about it. Things are going from bad to worse out there on the street, and we have to know if we can depend on you in a crisis.
Rowan shifted tiredly in her chair.
Yes, I suppose you do. And it would feel so good to talk about it to someone. But you have to swear not to tell Buchan in Toom. Especially Toom.
She looked at Hawk and Fisher in turn, fixing them with her piercing eyes in her weary face, and waiting until they'd both nodded in agreement.
I have cancer. It's well established and very advanced. And there's nothing that can be done about it. I thought for a long time I could cure it myself with my knowledge of potions. By the time I discovered I couldn't, it was too late. It spread too far for alchemy to do any good now. I've talked to experts. There are spells that might work, but I don't have that kind of money. I've got a month or so left, maybe a little more. You mustn't tell Tomb, it would upset him. He hasn't the power to cure me himself, and the dear fool would bankrupt himself trying to raise the money to buy a cure. It's better he doesn't know.
But surely one of the gods could do something. I mean, they do miracles, don't they?
I used to think that, but if I've learned anything here, it's that there are no gods on the Street of Gods. I looked really hard, trying to find just one. But all I found was supernatural beings with no love for the God Squad.
Tomb and Buckin came in, bearing trays of cold food. For various reasons, no one had much to say while they ate, so the meal had passed for the most part in silence. Rowan had just picked at her food, finally putting it to one side and quietly announcing she was going back to bed and didn't want to be disturbed. The others sat quietly for a while, thinking their separate thoughts. Finally, Tomb broke the silence.
You mustn't mind, Rowan. It's just her way. She'll be a lot better once she's had a little rest.
Sure. We understand.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to be going out again.
Tomb pushed his empty plate to one side and stood up.
Already? We only just finished putting down that riot and clearing up after the Hellfire Club. What else is there that needs doing?
Nothing for you to worry about, Captain. This is just some old personal business that I have to attend to. I won't be long. I'll see you again later.
He nodded generally to them all and left. Buckin got to his feet.
I'm afraid I must be off as well. Tomb isn't the only one who's had to neglect his personal life of late. I'll be back in an hour or two. If you have to go out as well, don't worry about Rowan. There are wards around the house to keep her safe and alert Tomb if she needs anything. Now, I really must be going.
As quickly as that, he was gone. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
I'll follow Tomb. You follow Buckin, right?
Right. There are too many secrets around here for my liking. You know, those have to be two of the flimsiest excuses I've ever heard.
I get the feeling they're both under pressure. And I don't just mean the trouble on the street. They probably intended to go out a lot earlier, but got sidetracked by the riot and the Hellfire Club. They've had enough time to get a good start by now. Let's go.
They got to their feet and hurried out into the corridor. Hawk spotted one of Tomb's long, hooded robes hanging on a wall hook and slipped it on instead of his own distinctive guard's cloak. With the hood pulled well forward, he looked like just another priest. He glanced at Fisher.
Maybe you should try a disguise, too.
6-foot muscular blonde women tend to stand out in a crowd, no matter what they're wearing. I'll just have to be careful, that's all. It's dark out, so as long as I keep well back and stick to the shadows, I should be all right. I'll meet you 2 hours from now at the Dead Dog Tavern, our usual booth. Sound good to you?
Great. Maybe now we'll get a break on this case and find a motive that makes sense. The way things are going, I'd settle for a motive that doesn't make sense. Now let's move it before we lose him.
Hawk had no trouble locating Tomb. The sorcerer was striding down the Street of Gods at a pace that kept threatening to break into a run. People saw the scowl on his face and got out of his way fast. Hawk strode along after him, not even trying to be inconspicuous. Even at this late hour of the evening, there were crowds of priests and acolytes and worshippers bustling back and forth, getting on with the business of life that the riot had only briefly interrupted. Hawk was just another robed figure among many. Not that Tomb would have noticed anyway. Tomb shouldered his way through the crowd with utter indifference to the snarls and curses this earned him, apparently entirely preoccupied with wherever he was going. Hawk had been banking on that. If Tomb even suspected he was being followed, he would undoubtedly have any number of spells to deal with the situation, few, if any, of them pleasant. Tomb strode on, ignoring the manifestations that haunted the sidewalks and alleyways. Hawk followed Tomb down into the low-rent section of the Street of Gods, where the twisting back streets and alleyways turned in upon themselves, offering sanctuary to beings and beliefs who had fallen on hard times, a last harbor for forgotten gods and fading philosophies. Hawk hung well back as Tomb approached a nondescript, weather-beaten door set into a dirty white wall. The sorcerer produced a heavy iron key from a hidden pocket and unlocked the large iron padlock. The door opened under his hand, and he disappeared inside, pulling the door shut behind him. Hawk quickly took up a position in a shadowed doorway overlooking the street, in case this was only a way stop and the sorcerer might reappear unexpectedly. Long moments passed, No one moved in the narrow back street. Hawk bit his lip, scowling thoughtfully.
What's Tomb doing here? It can't be anything illegal. He made no attempt to disguise his appearance. But what is so important to Tomb that it could drag him down here at this time of night? He's clearly exhausted from coping with the riot.
Hawk left his hiding place and padded silently over to the shabby door. He listened carefully, but everything seemed quiet within. He tried the door handle and raised an eyebrow as it turned easily under his hands, and the door swung open. Hawk froze, but no one came to investigate. He slipped inside. The narrow hallway was lit by a single lamp on the wall. Hawk tested the glass with his fingertips. It was barely warm. Tomb must have lit the lamp when he came in, which suggested there was no one here but the sorcerer. The walls were bare wood. They might have been waxed or polished a long time ago, but now there was only a thick coating of dust on the dull surfaces. Whatever this place was, no one had lived in it for a long time. No doors led off the hallway. Hawk followed it to its end, where it turned a sharp corner and became a long, narrow stairway leading down into darkness. Hawk scowled at the bottomless gloom, and then reached for the stub of a candle and box of matches he kept in his cloak pocket for emergencies. His fingers scrabbled futilely against rough cloth for a long moment before he remembered he was wearing one of Tomb's robes instead of his guard's cloak.
Damn it.
He padded back down the hall to fetch the lamp. The stairway didn't look nearly so menacing in the lamplight, but even so, he still hesitated at the top. When all was said and done, following a sorcerer into an unknown situation was never a good idea. There could well be a magical bodyguard or a booby trap waiting for him at the foot of the stairs. The suppressor stone might protect him, but it was still in Fisher's pocket. Hawk shook his head quickly and drew his axe. He'd faced sorcerers before with nothing but cold steel in his hand, and he was damned if he'd let his nerves get the better of him now. He descended slowly into the dark, lamp in one hand, axe in the other, ears straining for any sound down below. The walls were bare stone, rough and crumbling, and splotched here and there with clumps of lichen.
What the hell is Tomb doing in a dump like this? It can't be anything commonplace or innocent, or he'd have said where he was going. That means Tomb either won't or can't explain. I don't like secrets, particularly when they leave me in the dark in the middle of a murder inquiry.
The stairs ended at a simple wooden door, standing slightly ajar. Light shone around its edges. Hawk stayed put on the bottom step. He seemed to have spent an awful lot of time hovering outside ominous-looking doors recently, and none of them led him anywhere pleasant. He hefted his axe. He kicked the door open.
Come in, Captain Hawk. I've been waiting for you.
The sorcerer was sitting on a plain wooden stool a few yards beyond the doorway. Above and around him loomed a bare stone cavern, maybe 20 feet high and almost as wide. A pale blue light flickered around the sorcerer, gleaming brightly on metallic traces in the rock. There was no one else there, only the sorcerer Tomb. Hawk stayed put in the doorway, looking around him. There had to be someone else there. Tomb couldn't have come all this way just to sit in a cave by himself.
How long have you known I was here?
Quite some time, Captain. I wouldn't be much of a sorcerer if I didn't know when I was being spied on, now would I? Don't worry, I'm not angry. In your position, I'd probably have done the same. Probably. I like the robe, by the way. It suits you.
Tomb, what are you doing here?
It's rather difficult to put into words, Captain. But if you'll stop skulking in the shadows and come and join me, I'll do my best to explain.
Hawk mentally tossed a coin, shrugged, and stepped forward. He might as well. He wasn't learning anything useful where he was. The moment he crossed the threshold, the presence washed over him like a wave. It filled the cavern. A vast, implacable, but utterly intangible presence. It was like nothing but itself. A living entity with no physical existence, but so real that Hawk could almost feel its heartbeat against his skin. He looked wonderingly at Tomb, who smiled faintly.
Le bel inconnu, the fair unknown. It was worshipped as a god long ago, in another place. My family served as its priests for generations. But we are both far from home now, this god and I. It seems I'm the last of my line. And when Le bel inconnu discovered it was dying, it had no one else to turn to but me.
Dying? How can a god die? It doesn't even have a body.
Things are never that simple, Hawk. Especially not here, on the Street of Gods. There's a time for everything, beginning and an end for all that exists. Le Bel Inconnu was once a great being and knew the worship of millions. Now it is almost completely forgotten, nothing more than an obscure footnote in some of the Order histories. It has no followers and no priests. It came here to die, Hawk, to fade quietly away into the nothing it came from and go to whatever afterlife gods go to. I spend what time with it I can, and never know from one day to the next whether it will still be here the next time I call.
But why all the secrecy?
No member of the deity division is allowed to worship a god, Captain Hawk. Religion and faith are not for us. It's the law. How else could the beings on the street respect our judgments and be bound by them unless they could be sure we showed no favorites for any of them? Even so, I can't abandon Le Bel Inconnu. No one should have to go into the dark alone, with no one to care or even know they've gone. But if word of my vigil were to get out, I'd have to leave the guard squad. I don't want that. I've given my life to the squad. Before I took over, it was a mess. No one took it seriously, least of all the beings. I changed all that, made the squad a power to be reckoned with. The Street of Gods had known almost 10 years of peace, until the god murders began.
He looked unflinchingly at Hawk.
Are you going to report this, Captain Hawk?
Hawk felt the presence beat on the air like the fluttering wings of a dying bird. Strictly speaking, Tomb's presence here, and the reasons for it, had nothing to do with the case he was investigating. Tomb's face showed a mixture of sadness and a divided sense of devotion to duty and to a dying god. Hawk shook his head slowly, noted Tomb's relief and gratitude, and quietly left the building.